So you're bringing home a new puppy. Congratulations. Now what? We are going to talk about the three most crucial things to start teaching your puppy right away on today's episode of the McCann Dogs Podcast. Welcome back to McCann Dogs. With some of the skills that are so crucial to teach our puppies are often sort of neglected skills. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about some of the crucial skills that we need to teach our young puppies and all of the nuances surrounding those.
So, are these first skills that when we bring them home, we want to get started on?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of them are what you would think. You know, crate work obviously is something that we're going to start early with our dogs. In a perfect world, our dogs come home from a breeder who has already started this.
That would be perfect.
Oh, it's so nice when that happens.
Yes, yes.
Honestly, it really is the less traumatizing option for the puppy as well. Mm-hmm. And not to say that crating is traumatizing, but initially it can be a little bit of a, you know, a little bit uncomfortable for the pups because they're already experiencing so many new things. So it's not even necessarily that it's the crate itself that the pups find upsetting. It's the fact that they're suddenly in this new world and now they're in this new space and there's nothing familiar about it.
Yes. So, and they're used to sleeping in a pile of puppies.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now they're having to sleep without their puppy pile.
The breeders that start the early crate training while they're still in the home and while they're still with their litter mates, and like it might look something like the first night, all of the puppies sleep together in one crate. And then the second night, there's three and three. And then the third night, there's two, two, and two. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if there's six. Good math skills on me. And then eventually they get to be solo in their own crates, but they might be facing each other. They might be side by side. They can smell each other. You know, mom's in the room too. Like there's all these comforts that it's like, okay, you know what? I'm used to this. This is no big deal.
Right.
And then when they go to their new place, their new home, there's this familiar thing for them, right?
Yes.
They've already developed the emotional tie to the crate that makes them feel safe. And we can take that with them when we take them from the breeders and bring them into our new home. So in a perfect world, oh my goodness, it's so nice. I've had a couple of puppies that were started already with crate training and a couple of puppies that were not started with crate training. And I mean, the difference really is a remarkable thing. And it's so much nicer for the puppy themselves.
I've never had a breeder. I've had excellent breeders, but none of them have ever started.
Oh, really?
In a crate.
Interesting.
And it showed with some of them.
Yeah.
Cowboy had lived her life in an X pen under a heat lamp.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
And
I bet Saluki puppy in Canada.
Yes, yes. And both my Malinois, I think, had grown up feral in piles of shavings in a barn.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. And I think Saber had never even been inside a house.
Oh, wow.
She'd only been in a barn and in a dog run outside.
Okay. That was a long time ago, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I mean, I'm sure it still happens, but it's probably less likely these days.
So when I introduced them to a crate, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I bet.
Yes. Yeah. It was tough.
I bet. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. But crating is so important. We've done some episodes on crating, so I don't want to go too deep into crating, but some of the benefits of crating. What is the first thing that comes to mind?
Well, the crate keeps the puppy safe.
Love that.
The puppy's not chewing electrical cords. Yeah. They're not eating things they shouldn't. They're not peeing all over the house.
Yeah.
It prevents bad habits.
Absolutely. I love that the crate will also promote a little bit of regulation for the puppy. Mm-hmm. Puppies are young, obviously. Duh. Puppies being young don't self-regulate yet. So that means that they don't conserve energy. They don't know how to conserve energy in order to, you know, have some energy down the road. They basically have these modes where it's like go, go, go or crash. They don't really have a lot in between. So the crate basically, to me, it forces the nap, right? It's like taking the toddler to the crib and saying, sorry, you know what? I know you're stomping your feet and saying you're not tired, but I think you'll feel a lot better after a nap. So let's do that.
Yes. It's like at daycare. When your kids are young at daycare, they often have nap time at daycare.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that is for the sanity of the daycare workers, right?
Because
when you have overstimulated creatures, be they human or dog, that becomes huge.
Right. Yes. Yes.
huge thing. Yes. Naughty behaviors right. abound.
Yes.
Lots more nipping behaviors, lots of things that are unwanted behaviors. You really are better to stay in front of those things, and then you can start to slowly give your dogs more freedom and more time awake and more time out of the crate, et cetera, when they get to the point right. where they yes. can self-regulate and they'll make better choices. But
I don't know why people miss that. Everyone who has I'm assuming most people who have children know their children need yeah. to sleep.
It's funny, isn't
it? But they don't think puppies need to sleep.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's funny because if I said to you, and I said this to our new crop of Life Skills 1 in-person mm-hmm. students last week, mm-hmm. I said, you know, a lot of times people will think about children. And of course, if you're raising a toddler, you're holding their hand through things. You're directing their behavior. You don't just bring them home, put them down on the floor and say, okay, good luck, make good choices. Right.
Yeah, and stay awake all day too.
yeah. yeah. but this is what we do with our puppies, right? Instead of the intuitive thing for us being to, you know, lock down and mm-hmm. monitor and follow mm-hmm. them around when they're,
right.
you know, we instead just go, okay, you're a puppy, so here you go. We put them down when we bring them home and we say, make good choices.
Right.
And of course, they're puppies. Mm-hmm. So they're going to make good choices that work for them, right. but they're not going to make good choices that align with our idea of
exactly. Yes, we need to raise them just yeah. like we raise our children. Yes,
absolutely. Don't send them off and say make good choices. You know, direct their behavior for the first, I would say probably about the first 6 months. Mm-hmm. I'm really on it in terms of like the supervision and the training and everything being directed. And then there's very small amounts of offering them more freedom in there, but they're usually very monitored. They're usually very directed as well. Mm-hmm. And then eventually we get to the point where I can loosen up on the reins. The puppy is well versed in the rules of the house at that right. point. They've got some training under their belt. So now when I start giving them more freedom, I have things like response to name to get them back. I have things like leave it to make mm-hmm. sure that when they go to investigate the shoe for the first time, I can just say, hey, leave that. That's off limits for right. you. And they go, oh, okay, got it. It's not this like wrestling match where I'm trying yes. to constantly fight with the puppy to give right. me back my shoe.
Because the puppy will find that fun.
Yeah, exactly.
The puppy will think that is a hoot.
Exactly.
And they'll repeat
hoot, hoot. And we don't have the skills to be able to say to them, leave it at that point.
Right.
So basically it's like now we're becoming, you know, this irritated person that's trying mm-hmm. to keep taking the shoe away and like, oh, this puppy is stubborn, right?
Right.
That's and then words like that come out mm-hmm. and we start feeling adversarial with
right.
our puppies.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
not a good thing.
And you know, often it's never the puppy, it's
yeah.
us. If
yeah.
if my 100%. Puppy is doing something wrong, it's my fault.
Yeah.
It's not the puppy's fault. They're just
Guess
being
what?
A puppy.
If my puppy's doing something wrong, it's your
my fault,
fault
too. Why isn't Christine here to stop this?
Why did she teach my puppy bad habits?
Right, yes.
The other thing that I love the crate for is for building confident independence.
Yes.
So a
yes.
lot of times puppies will, you know, for that first little while, they're going to be glued to us. They're going to follow us around. And then, of course, as things shift a little bit and we need to withdraw ourselves a bit more from their lives, maybe we go back to work or maybe we're, you know, leaving them for longer periods mm-hmm. of time and they don't have that option to follow us around, it can lead to a little bit of separation anxiety.
Right.
So the crate allows us to just slowly detach ourselves, to be there and to help them through it,
right.
but to slowly remove ourselves from the situation so they can build that confident independence. Mm-hmm. And then when we get to the point where we're like, okay, I'm going back to work and I'm leaving you loose in the house because
right.
now you're, you know, however old mm-hmm. and you learned all the rules and life is great. Now we have a dog that gets to have their entire life free out of the crate, but they're still prepared to be crated should
right.
we need to leave them at the vet or mm-hmm. leave them at a kennel or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So any other reasons that you love crate training?
It gives me a break from the puppy.
That is a good one.
Think of it like that.
Yeah.
This is my sanity right now. Because sometimes when you have a busy household, if you have young children, a busy job, you know, everyone has a busy life.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter what you have going on. You can put that puppy in there and they're going to nap for a few hours
mm-hmm.
and you have some time to plan. Okay.
Yes.
What am I doing now when I get that puppy out again?
Yeah.
So it's a break.
Yeah.
It's a babysitter for your dog.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes that is a much needed thing for mm-hmm. us to continue to build skills and understanding with the puppy while maintaining our composure and our patience.
Right. Yes.
Because puppies are a lot. They can mm-hmm. be really trying.
Right.
And
yeah.
If you're constantly feeling under the gun from your puppy, chances are it's not going to be an enjoyable experience
right.
for you. So They need a nap. We need to make sure that they're not getting into overstimulation mode. You need a break. We mm-hmm. need to make sure that you're not getting overwhelmed with right. the puppy. So this is a perfect yeah. union. I
and
love it.
Crates also make great end tables. Get true. A piece of plywood and cut it and put it over your crate. And voila, you have an instant table to put things on.
I didn't even bother with the plywood. My end tables are right. just crates. And right. then when I bring home a puppy, it's another right. crate oh, I
guess,
on the crate.
I guess because mine was a wire crate. So things would fall through. Gotcha. So yeah, I got a piece of plywood and I spray painted it to kind of match my wood and put it on top. And
perfect.
Yeah, I got this great little table now.
Fancy.
Yeah. Very swanky. Fancy. Very swanky.
It.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes.
The perils of a dog trainer. The furniture in a dog trainer's home.
I remember one of my friends who was a dog trainer's house. She had the plastic airline crates at either side of her couch and her lamp set up on them. And they truly were her of end course. Tables. Yes.
You know, some people make these like really nice decorative crates mm-hmm. that are like quite lovely looking mm-hmm. that will fit into a nice home decor.
Right, so, Martha Stewart.
Yeah, yep. I probably wouldn't use one with a puppy mm-hmm. because, you know, puppies might chew that expensive right, wood, yes. things like that.
And they, yeah, wood but is very tempting for dogs to chew.
Once you get to the point where your dogs are adults and have reliable chewing habits, should you wish to keep a crate in your home? There is an option if
there
you search,
is, yes.
I don't know, wood crafting crates yeah, or something yeah. like that.
Yeah, like furniture crates.
Yeah,
or
furniture
that.
Crates, that's a good one.
Yes. But you know what? By the time your dog's an adult, you know what? You've just, this is fine. This looks good. I like this crate. You'll stick with your wire crate. Yeah.
Yeah, you know how you get used to the decor yeah, in your yeah, home? You do, it just yeah. kind of, oh, hey, yeah. oh, that's changed. That's different. I don't even like it anymore. It's a table. I need my crate back.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Yes.
It's all good. Okay. Some more crucial skills to teach puppies, crucial things to develop with our young puppies. Toys, toy play, interaction. Puppies and dogs love to chew.
They do.
Love to chew, mm-hmm. love to play. Mm-hmm. And all of these things we want to give them outlets for, but we want to make sure they're appropriate and safe.
Right.
So, my question for you, what are your go-to toys with a young puppy first off?
Well, I want them to have safe chew toys mm-hmm. that they can lay and chew on and are not going to cause them any safety concerns.
Okay, so what does that look like?
So it might be a rubber Kong. It might be a nylon type bone. I would, you know, look at the pet store and I'm going to look for, you know, I might ask the recommendations of the pet store staff. And I'm going to say like, what are your long lasting like rubber or nylon chews that my puppy can't destroy? And I'm always going to buy one size bigger than what
yeah,
I think the puppy needs.
I love that. That's such a good thing mm, to yes. talk about.
Now, and we do a lot of talking about putting things in Kongs.
Yes.
Believe it or not. Other than maybe the odd time putting a dog biscuit in, I've never put anything in a Kong.
Okay.
I've just encouraged my dogs to play with them just the way they are.
Okay.
The odd time I'll squeeze them and trap like a dog biscuit, like milk bone type shape in it.
Yeah.
But no, I just usually give them the Kong to play with and they're happy.
There you go. Nothing yes. wrong with that.
Right.
Kongs are fun because they bounce erratically mm-hmm. a little bit. You know, you can put things in them if you want to. I've used them like that. I've used them like mm-hmm. that, like you've suggested as well. Mm-hmm. They have multiple uses. I actually have multiple different sizes and right. shapes of Kongs
yes.
as well. I really like the, I think they're called Goody Bones.
Yes.
The Kong Goody Bones.
Yeah, I know
where
what you
it's
mean.
Actually a bone shape, but then they've got the openings where you can put cookies in there. And right. I love watching Ned
Get
figure those out
yes.
because they fit in like mm-hmm. really tightly. And basically he has learned that, okay, so I bite it so that it breaks apart the cookie mm-hmm. and then I throw it. So he'll toss it and right. then he'll go and clean up the bits of cookie that fell out
right.
and then he'll pick it up and he'll bite it and he'll toss it and he'll go and he'll clean up the little bits of cookie. It's so interesting to
yes,
watch him.
Yes.
He's definitely like he's got this rhythm and this technique down mm-hmm. and it's like he's on a mission.
Right.
It's so smart.
It is.
They're
yes.
so smart.
Yes.
They're so smart.
And other puppy toys. So I have safe toys that mm-hmm. the puppy can chew on when I'm, you know, when they're in their crate and I'm, you know, they're on their own.
Actually, let's talk about that just for a second longer, because I know that a lot of times people are looking for a soft plush toy for the dog to chew. So we've talked about a couple of things that are safe for the dogs to chew, but is there any plush toys that you would ever leave with your dog to chew?
Never. Me either. I err on the side of caution.
Yeah.
I have worked at an emergency vet clinic, and I don't know how many emergency surgeries I saw that were dog toys that a puppy had ingested.
It's true.
So, you know, even just like chewing off like a little nibble on the eye or the little nibble on the ear or pulling fur off it, the plushness of it. Yeah, or the tag.
Yeah.
Or the tag's an easy one to chew off. Yes.
The stuffing too. All these things can cause blockages. Mm-hmm. And toys run the gambit. You know, everybody's always trying to sell the next best dog toy. And I have seen toys that people claim to be indestructible. I'm seeing these a lot on Facebook lately, actually. Okay. And of course, there's always a multitude of comments going, give me a break. My dog tore through this in 3 seconds. Or, you know, people laughing at it as if it's a joke. It truly is a joke. There is no indestructible toy out there.
Nope.
And it's not good practice to let your dogs chew on stuffed toys.
Right.
You know, you might have an older dog that's reliable with chewing habits that you play with stuffed toys. Mm-hmm. Like, I know you have your, what are the garden things that you had where?
I have a stump with little chipmunks.
Right.
And I stick the chipmunks. There's 3 of them. They go inside the stump. And I throw it, and Honda runs, and he sticks his head in the holes, and he pulls out the chipmunks and shakes them. And then whatever one's last, he runs over to me, and we throw it for a few times. And then I go back, and I stick all the chipmunks in, and then he pulls them out. We also have a barn with little chicks that he can stick his face in the holes and pull them out. And we also have a square cube that he can stick his face in the hole and pulls out the balls that are in.
So cute.
And he just loves to stick his face in those and pull out the toys. But it's always 100% supervision. Yeah. I'm watching. Those toys are kept in the cupboard.
Perfect.
And I will go over and say, you know what, let's play with the chipmunks in their stump. And I pull them out. And there's also one I haven't got. It's bees in a beehive.
Oh.
That's another one. Yes.
That sounds fun too.
So, yeah. And it's funny because I've had other dogs that don't really stick their face inside it. You know, they sort of, you know, they wait for Honda to pull the toy out for them to get.
Okay.
But Honda and Cowboy just figured it out right away. Just stick your face in and pull the toy out and give it a shake.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. I love it. So that is a great example of supervising with a toy and not letting them chew it. That should be something that they're not allowed to be left to chew. So there's that one side of the gambit that, you know, these people claiming that their toys are indestructible, which they're not. They really aren't. Mm-mm. There's no such thing. No such thing. There are dogs that can go through the Kongs. There are dogs that can go through nylon bones quite quickly. Every dog's going to be a little bit different with their chewing. I've personally never had a dog, even with a Rottweiler, I've never had a dog that has been able to tear through a Kong, but there are lots of dogs that do.
One dog that can go through a Kong, and believe it or not, it was a corgi.
Oh, I was just going to say, was it one of your mallets?
For some reason, I had this little corgi named Gavin, and he figured out how to go through Kongs.
Yeah, see, there you go.
And I've never had a dog go through a Kong.
How do you combat that to make sure that your dogs are going to be safe with that chew toy before you leave them alone?
Always supervise. So I bring home a new dog toy, and I put it on the floor, and I supervise. Mm-hmm. So I did actually, a few weeks ago, I brought home a brand new dog toy that I've never given Honda before. And it is a wooden stick, and it's made out of coffee wood.
Oh,
and
what's coffee wood?
I guess wood from a coffee tree. But it has no caffeine, it said.
You just blew my mind. It never even occurred to me to think about where coffee beans come
right?
from.
So it's very manicured looking stick with no pokies or anything on it. And I read about it and I thought, Honda is an elderly dog and he's missing a few teeth. And I thought, this might be a good chew for Honda. And I brought it home and I gave it to him and I sat and watched. And he did chew it and play with it. And it said on the packaging that little bits might come off and when they're wet, they just pass harmlessly through the dog.
Okay.
So I watched and I thought, okay, yeah, there is tiny little shreds coming off, but it says it's harmless. I let him chew it for about 15 minutes. Then I picked it up and I put it on the countertop and I still give him that toy, but I always watch him with it because little bits do come off it. Now I think a Rottweiler would just crunch that thing right up.
I would think so. Yeah.
You must be able to buy much bigger ones for bigger dogs, but because Honda's small and tiny, I thought I'm going to give it a try. But we've had it a few weeks now, and I'm still being uber cautious with it because this is a whole new toy for me, and I don't want Honda to ever become injured.
I don't blame you. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even in the safe realm, there are toys that I want to, like the Kongs, the Nylon Bones, I want to watch my dog chew that before I ever leave him solo yes. with it. And I'm going to be very clear. I would never even consider leaving my dog solo with anything other than a Kong or a Nylon Bone. And again, the same caveat here. Is I've spent some time watching them and I know that they're not a Gavin. And they're not right, able yes. to tear apart the Kong and then yes. swallow hunks of it.
I remember it was Christmas morning. And each dog got a Kong, and I remember passing out three Kongs to three dogs, and they all run off with their Kongs to chew. And I remember getting up and walking towards the kitchen, and there's Gavin with a black Kong in chunks.
And the black Kong is the extreme Kong. Yes. It's meant for more powerful chewers.
And
so how much did he weigh?
He was a Cardigan Welsh Corgi, so okay. he's far bigger than a Pembroke. He weighed about, I'd say, tip-top condition, well-muscled, about 35 pounds.
Okay, mm-hmm. and went through a Kong, yep. so yeah.
And then it wasn't the first one he went through. He went through some other ones, too. So and it's funny because the other two dogs would chew and chew and chew on the Kong, and then somehow Gavin got it, and it's like, oh, it's in pieces again.
Oh, my gosh.
So I knew it wasn't a weak Kong. It was he had some sort of chew technique that mastered the Kong.
He knew it.
And I've never seen that. Never seen that again.
Yeah, and not a big dog. I mean, powerful jaws, of course, but not a big dog and able to go through something that's meant for very powerful chewers. So always good to know your dog first before leaving them alone.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt you way back.
Oh, no, that was okay.
Let's focus on this for a bit more. So you were headed to the next type of toy that we like to talk about.
Interactive soft toys?
Interactive toys. So what does an interactive toy look like when you're working with your dog?
Well, interactive toys are ones that are usually soft and they could pull apart if I let them. Or they could be a long, fuzzy toy that we play tug of war with. So any toy that is fun, but could easily be wrecked by the dog.
Yeah.
Holy rollers. There's a type of rubber dog ball that I love to use, but if my dog spent any time with it, he would chew it up.
Yeah.
So a holy roller is another type of dog toy that's...
Yeah, and basically anything that your dog can tear apart should be an interactive toy or something that you're supervising them heavily with when they're engaged with it and making sure that you take it away. I also like to inspect my dog's Nylon Bones and their Kongs quite a bit. Even if I trust them with those things, I still make sure that every once in a while I pick one up, I look at it. You're talking about holy rollers. I constantly have holy rollers out on my deck and out on the property because, of course, you know,
they're fun.
And
yeah,
they're fun.
The pet store, look for holy rollers. They're a fun toy.
And I have one that I'm right about to throw away at this point because it's spent time outside in the elements.
And they do degrade. So, the rubber looks different.
It's cracky and it's ripped in places. And that's, you know, when we've been tugging, it's ripped in places, but it's at the point where it's like, okay, there could be a chunk that comes off this, even when we're interacting and like, I don't want him swallowing that.
I have to talk about how toys have changed for dogs too.
Okay.
I remember when I was a little girl, whenever one of my parents got a new puppy, we always go to the pet store or Walmart. I guess Walmart wasn't around in Canada when I was little. It was Wilco. And we would go to the pet section and you get like a latex newspaper. Like it was a rubber newspaper and a rubber chicken leg. And they both would squeak. Or there was a rubber pork chop.
That was the extent of the options.
And that was your options, yes. I remember the newspaper was like rubber and it squeaked and it said daily growl or something on it. And then there was also the rubber pork chop and then there was also the rubber chicken leg.
Those
were your puppy toys that you brought home.
That's so funny.
Yeah, and it was the ritual. It's like, let's go get those three
chicken and our pork chop.
Right, yeah. And then I remember.
And our newspaper.
Yeah, I remember with Iggy when she was a puppy, I was 19 when I got her going, and it was like there was this little latex, latex pig I had for her, a little latex alligator. And now it's like, I don't even think I'd consider buying those toys anymore.
My goodness.
Very retro. We should bring back the retro dog toys.
We should.
Yes.
We should. We should have a museum.
Museum of
that
retro
shows
toys.
Off all these strange things that
toys
we have used.
Have so evolved. Like they've like the yeah. toy department.
I think it's the market is overwhelming for it now, right?
Yes.
Like there, we used to dogs used to have a very different role in our lives,
right?
And now, of course, we want to give them the world and let them live their best lives. So right. we're always looking for the next greatest toy.
Oh, there was also a rubber loafer, like a shoe, but it was a loafer. It was a men's dress
and
shoe,
and like pretend laces. Yeah, yeah. Right? Yeah, I totally remember yeah. that one.
It was yellow, I think, or like a brownish yellow. Yeah, yeah,
exactly, the men's the color of shoe that you like to wear.
Right, yes. And you know what? My dogs played happily with that shoe, and they never once chewed one of my shoes.
Well, maybe because it was a different color.
It was, and it was so different.
There you go.
So I don't wear rubber loafers.
Maybe you should start.
Right, yes.
Rubber loafers coming your way for your but birthday, Swanee.
Isn't that funny? It was a chicken leg, a pork chop, a rolled up newspaper, a rubber loafer. I think it's funny the shapes oh they gosh. Chose. Yeah. You if anyone can think of any other, the old retro dog toys, please put them in the comments. Yes. That's a fun
we'll
memory.
We'll go down memory lane. Yes. I do remember like the rubber pork chops and the rubber shoe and whatnot.
Yes.
That's so funny. Oh my gosh. Okay. So we have covered a couple of crucial components. The next one, so important. Absolutely. One of the most important things that you are going to do with your puppies is conditioning them to handling. So let's yes. talk a little bit about this. There's so many focuses and so many reasons that we want to condition them to handling. But first, what am I talking about? What do I mean?
We want our puppy.
Please tell me. I have no idea.
We want our puppy to know that when we touch them or manipulate them or maneuver them, to be calm and relaxed. Mm-hmm. It's not a scary thing. It's not a bad thing. It's part of life and it brings good rewards.
Yeah, absolutely. Things like nail trims, you know, things like pulling burrs out of coats, things like medicating ears. These are all things that could potentially be frightening for our puppies.
Right, yes.
And the last thing we want to do is leave it to chance.
Exactly.
And actually, that's not the last thing we want to do. The last thing we want to do is force it. Mm-hmm. The last thing we want to do is like pin our puppies to try to trim their nails. There's some dogs that you might be able to get away with that for the entirety of their life in terms of strength, but they're few and far between. And it's not fair for them. It's really unfair for them right. when it's something that we can take control of mm-hmm. and we can help them through the process.
Right.
So it can't be taken for granted how right. important it is. I know I talk about this a lot, but when my puppies come home, I spend time doing nail work every single day. And that doesn't mean that I trim nails every day. It means that I do work on handling their toes, separating them out a little bit, mm-hmm. putting pressure on the end of the nail. You know, I might tap the clippers against mm-hmm. the end of the nail. I might put a little bit of pressure on the nail. Each of these steps, I'm going to help my puppy understand or a positive thing by building an association with it. So as I'm touching the nail, as I'm putting the pressure, I'm saying yes. And then I'm going to reward my puppy with something tasty. I keep those sessions short. You know, it might take me, I don't know, I want to say by the time I set up and do the actual work and then leave that work, it might be 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really not a lot of time, but I do that multiple times a week, usually daily, and it ends up being a situation where my dogs are like, yeah, piece of cake. Trim my nails, Dremel my nails, don't care.
Right.
Touch my ear, do this, do that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't care. Actually, they do care because they enjoy it
right,
because
yes.
they know that good things come with it.
Right.
And then I can take those skills to my groomer. I mm-hmm. can take, although I groom my own dogs. You can tell when you look at right. them that I groom them my own dogs. Ned's ears, usually his right. left ear, because I'm right-handed, uh-huh. his left ear will be lovely. And his right ear will be a little bit of a hack job because,
right.
of course, getting over to that side is a little bit harder.
Yes.
But
you know, it.
You'd never but, know. I've right. I've trimmed taller feet and ears for like 24 years now.
You'd blame it on the scissors. It was just yeah. a bad batch of scissors.
I have good scissors though too. I think I spent. Was it nearly 300 on my thinning shears?
Right, yeah.
Like, and at the time I was like, oh, that's a lot of money to spend on thinning shears, but my hands were cramping with the ones that I had that were cheaper mm-hmm. ones. And I thought, you know what, Shannon, you're worth it at this
right,
point.
Yes,
yeah. Go and, buy yourself good thinning shears.
And it does
shears.
Make a big difference.
Well,
yeah,
and then
it does,
I talked,
the scissors.
And then I talked to my own hairstylist right. about the amount of money he spends on scissors.
Oh.
And I was like, oh yeah, it wasn't anywhere. It was like thousands.
Oh,
he was
wow.
like, oh yeah, this pair is like 6,000. What?
I think my hairdresser just uses her kitchen scissors.
Oh my gosh, yeah. That's what I would use
right, yeah.
if I was a stylist. Yeah, oh yeah. my goodness. So what What sorts of things do you do with your puppies when it comes to handling? Like, are you preparing them for anything in particular?
Well, I'm definitely preparing them for veterinary visits. Mm-hmm. And Honda goes to see a groomer. I used to groom him, but like you, Honda did not look that good after I groomed him. Aww. So off he goes to
the
groomer.
We're good dog trainers. We're not good dog groomers.
I'm not artistic.
Stay in your lane. We know what. No.
If I worked at it, but yeah, absolutely. I like grooming, but I didn't fall in love with grooming. Gotcha. And I thought, I can let him go to the groomers.
Now, yes. What if you got an Afghan hound?
Well, I can brush. I can brush dogs. I just can't sculpt with trimmers dogs.
Would you ever leave your house again, or would you just spend all your days brushing your beautiful Afghan?
Probably brushing my Afghan. Yes, I wouldn't want the Afghan to ever leave the house because I wanted the beauty, which wouldn't be fair to the Afghan. So,
yeah, yes. It's true.
Yes.
It's true.
So I'm accustoming Honda to the groomer. I'm accustoming other dogs to being at the vet. When I worked at the emergency vet clinic, we were open when all the other vets were closed. And I was very surprised how many people would come in Saturday morning and say, my dog needs eardrops twice a day and my vet office is closed. I have to come to emergency to get them in. And we're like, well, you can do that at home. No, he'll bite us. He doesn't like his ears being touched.
Yeah, and when there's an infection present, it's doubly hard
right.
for the dog.
It's so sore, yes.
Preemptive work is mm-hmm. so important.
And those people spent a fortune in twice a week. And, you know, often we had true emergencies. We had a dog that eats rat poison or a dog that's been hit by a car. And you know what? Your dog needing eardrops is the least of our concerns now. So they would sit there and wait till one of us risked getting bitten to put the eardrops in. So, it's not fair to your dog, and it's not fair to people who are going to have to handle your dog either.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember being at the vet clinic once during COVID. Now, I was out in New Brunswick, so COVID didn't hit quite as hard, and we were able to go into the clinic, but we had to wear masks. And I overheard the vet talking to the receptionist and him saying, nope, I don't want this dog as a client anymore. It's too dangerous. It's going to bite someone. And we're going to discharge this dog and it will no longer be one of our clients.
Oh my goodness.
And my heart broke for that dog that now it can't receive veterinary care. The vet was unwilling to work with it. Yeah. So,
it's true. Like, we can't pose that danger to our professionals. I mean, a dog bite can change your life drastically.
Right? Yes.
So it's not fair for the dog. It's not fair for the vet. I mean, it's understandable that a dog going into a veterinary emergency situation or, you know, going into a vet situation where they're in pain, it is understandable that they are not going to be at their best in that moment.
Yes.
But it's not acceptable it's not any more acceptable for the dog to bite the vet as it would be if I punched my doctor when he gave me a shot.
Right.
Like, you know what? Yes, this is not a pleasant thing. I don't like getting mm-hmm. shots. I mean, I don't know anybody who does. I'm sure there are some people, right. but I don't like getting shots, but I need to be on my best behavior and I can't, you know, just react with my gut reaction. Mm-hmm. And we need to expect the same thing of our dogs because we need our vets, need our medical team to be able to help our dogs mm-hmm. when they are struggling, when they're sick, when they're hurt. You know, all of these things, they're so crucial.
Right, yes. So I remember when Atari herniated her disc. Mm-hmm. She was in a lot of pain. And as I carried her into the vet's office, I said to the vet, I said, I know she's in a lot of pain. Go ahead and muzzle her because I don't know if you're moving things around. And, you know, that's acceptable. Yeah. She might completely lash out, and I gave them full permission to muzzle her. However, when I took Atari in for all of her vet appointments before that and after that, she was perfect, well-behaved. She was a good girl. She, you know, there would be no reason for her to ever try to bite a vet who is just trying to listen to her heart or look in her eye. But there are times when a dog's in extreme pain that...
Yes.
Yes, it is safety for the vet to be able to muzzle them to give them a good exam.
Yeah, and your honest assessment of that as well is so helpful. It's so helpful. But those regular vet visits, those regular trips, even the ones that the dogs are under stress, you know, understandable that extreme amounts of pain are going to bring out other behaviors and the dog is going to be in defense mode. But when it comes to the regular care, you know, I've talked about Ned's recent prostate mm-hmm. thing, and then we had to do an emergency neuter and blah, 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 blah. And when we went in for our recheck, I used a trick to move him on his back so the vet could check the incision, and that trick is cockroach. So normally,
I always laugh at the name of
right,
it.
Right, yes. Roll over on your back. So normally when he does cockroach, he's right. just confident as all get out, right. his legs are splayed, life is great. Mm-hmm. But when he did cockroach in that situation, you could see his whole body was tense. He did it, mm-hmm. but his whole body was tense. His legs were like pulled in at the back, like as if he was getting ready to kick. And he was just like in this state where he was like, okay, I don't want to do this, but I trust you. And mm-hmm. I'm just seeing the tension in his body in that moment,
right.
but him still saying, you know what? I'm okay. I can do this. Right. My mom's right here. And of course mm-hmm. I was right there.
Right. Yes.
I had him by the collar as the vet was down examining him mm-hmm. and was yes. telling what, him,
I
wait,
should mention when I passed Atari, it was during COVID and okay. I couldn't go in. It was horrific gotcha. To be able to yeah. just to pass her over, not knowing what was wrong.
Yeah. And, that is an extreme situation.
I had to sit out in the car yeah. in February. It was oh very cold.
Oh. I'm yes. so sorry for yes. you.
Yes. No. Well,
I bet that was very.
That was a very, very horrible situation.
Oh. Okay. Yes. Let's bring some levity here.
Right.
Tell a good joke.
But I'll say another. I have a funny joke, but it's too long to tell. But another reason too is the we have so many ticks in Southern Ontario
oh my
now.
Gosh, you're not kidding.
And. Even if you have a short-haired dog, you have to examine them for ticks before you bring them into your house
yeah.
because the last thing I want is to wake up in the middle of the night with a tick on my leg or find a tick on my child.
Yeah.
So I don't want any ticks in my house. So my dog needs to be able to have me examine them for lengths of time
yes.
while I go through them, making sure there's no ticks on their body.
Yeah, and they're really hard to find to begin with. Mm-hmm. So having a dog that is flailing and jumping all over the place while you're trying to find those things, ugh, that's not a good thing.
Right,
that's
yes.
not a good thing at all. So yeah, we want them calm. Mm-hmm. We want them compliant and still so that we can do our thorough checks.
Right.
I find that the best tick check method that I have discovered
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't even remember where I heard this, but I immediately bought a forced air dryer to go and do tick checks
right.
after seeing it work. And it really shows
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
we
have a video.
Dog.
We have a video yeah. on that I'm sure people could get on YouTube.
Yeah, is that the one with me showing
right,
the
yeah,
forced
like,
air
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
finding them on Ned? Mm-hmm. Like it truly, on with his coat is so thick. Like even when I'm physically running my fingers down, there's a lot of times that until the tick was actually, and this was back when I was using permethrin as my main source of tick prevention, and unfortunately it's no longer proving to be effective with the American dog ticks.
Oh, wow.
They're actually testing a higher concentration of permethrin, but of course that's more toxin to put on the dog, blah, 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 blah. So I've moved to something else at this point that is more effective. Right. But at the time, like, the permethrin wasn't working and the ticks would be on him, and I wouldn't even necessarily feel them through his coat because his coat is so thick mm-hmm. until they were starting to, like, get engorged. And I thought, like, this is just wrong. I can't let this happen. I need to go to something else. But at the time, like, those tick checks were really, really
right.
a
yes.
saving grace as well. And mm-hmm. being able to use the forced air dryer to find those ticks, ugh, it just changed things
right.
so drastically.
Yes. So that's another part of handling, too, is getting
exactly.
used. If you have a dog that needs to be blow dried,
yeah.
getting used to. I was on the weekend. I took Honda to a pet store with a pet wash in it. And I bathed him at the pet wash there, and they have a forced air blow dryer. And
okay.
I was thinking about you and Ned because Yay. When I was blow drying him, I could see his skin, and I thought, this is just like Shannon's video.
Look at that skin.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And Honda was so well behaved there. He stood quietly while I bathed him. He stood quietly while I blow dried him. I was very careful around his face and ears, of course.
Uh-huh.
But he just knew that, you know what, Christine can do anything with me and I'm safe.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. There's no stress in this situation because it's an experience I've had many times before.
Right.
And had lots of value built mm-hmm. for many times before. So I love that. I love being able to take my dogs into situations that I know could be overwhelming, but know that they have the tools to be able to handle the
yes.
stress of that situation without that one event being a learning mm-hmm. situation where they learn that bad things happen.
Right.
So, all right, we're jumping into some questions here. So Here is a question. What do you do for dogs that aren't toy motivated? That's a good question. Any thoughts on building toy drive?
Well, I touched on with Cowboy, finding the right toy. Yes. Often is it. So I have a whole duffel bag full of dog toys because I've bought so many. I have a little bit of an addiction.
Us dog people, we never get rid of dog stuff.
No.
We always just get more dog stuff.
More dog
stuff. If it's destroyed, it goes in the garbage. Otherwise, it goes in a training bag somewhere, and that training bag goes in a closet somewhere.
Yeah.
And eventually we go, what's that smell? We pull this old stinky toy out of an old training bag in a closet.
One game that I find dogs can't resist, I'm thinking about Shannon's closets now, is often tying a soft toy to a piece of rope about 5 or 6 feet long and dragging that toy along the floor or through your grass, making it resemble a little mouse running along.
Love that.
And dogs, most dogs have a prey drive or a chase drive.
Yes.
And it might take them a little bit to get going, but if you're having fun playing with this toy that you're dragging all about, chances are your puppy's going to become very interested or your adult dog, and they're going to start to interact with it.
Yeah,
so it's that's
true.
A great way to build some drive. So tie a soft toy to a rope, start to wiggle it along, let it dance and jump and pretend it's a little mouse, and most dogs are going to say, I need to catch that.
Absolutely love that. And a lot of times I think that people will pull out a toy and they present it to the dog by like shoving it in the dog's face.
Right, yes.
Or by expecting the dog to do a perfect retrieve. So they throw it 10 miles. And then when the dog goes, what? They're like, oh, you must not like toys. So I love that you talked about introducing it by using their prey drive because that is what is going to make them show interest in the toy. And as you're dragging it around on the ground, if you can give it little jerky moment movements, like think about a squirrel tail and the flitting that they do with their tail. Is that the right word?
I think flitting.
They flit their tail.
Yes.
And that's sort of a similar action that we want to create with the toy. When they show interest and they start to chase that toy, we want to be able to say, oh, it's going to move. It's going to move. And then they get excited about it and they start to chase it.
Yes.
Resist the urge to throw toys at your
dog. Yes. And another way, too, is sometimes to get another dog's toy and bring it over. So Honda doesn't like to start chewing nylon bones. A nylon bone to him is very boring.
Okay.
However, if I give the nylon bone to my parents' dogs for a week, then it gets all kind of roughed up and chewed up. And then I bring it back and Honda's like, oh, this is Billy's bone.
Yeah.
I'm going to chew it. So it's kind of like, oh, I'm going to chew Billy's bone. Ha, to you, Billy.
I got Billy's special bone. Right. I love that. Yeah. Sometimes you have to build the drive for toys over time. Sometimes it's not just going to happen right away. Mm-hmm. Most dogs do have prey drive. I mean, I would say there's a very small percentage that you're not going to see prey drive in because they've been so domesticated, et cetera. But the overwhelming majority of dogs are going to show prey drive over something moving, something fuzzy, something exciting. Mm-hmm. We can also build some anticipation of that game by having the toy, you know, like I might tuck it up on the fridge in the kitchen, for example, and I go into the kitchen and I'm, you know, I might be sneaky. What am I doing? So the dog's like, oh, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And then I go over to the fridge and I take the toy and I go, look at what I got. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Do you want to play with it? And then I put it back up on the fridge and I stop being exciting.
So mean. But it does build the drive.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and then I leave the kitchen and they're like, what? Oh, okay. And then I do it again.
Right.
And again. And then eventually when they're like, oh, you're going to that toy again. And they're showing this enthusiasm, excitement. Now I bring the toy out and I go, what's this thing? Get it. And we play and we have some fun. Or I might drag it around on the ground a little bit.
Yeah. Like you're not stuffing it in their face. You're moving it away from them. Yes.
Exactly. And that's going to create a dog that goes, bing. Oh.
Right.
I'm excited when that toy comes out. Mom's excited when that toy comes out. It's fun when that toy comes out. I want that toy.
Right, yes.
And we create a lot more engagement with
and
the toy.
And then you often, too, you put the toy away when they still want more.
Yes.
Don't let
that's
the dog,
an excellent point.
Yeah. Don't let the dog say, it got boring. I'm out of here now.
Yeah.
You know, while the dog is at its peak, say, oh, it's over now. Leave the dog wanting more.
Yes, exactly. If you get them to the point where they're like, okay, I'm exhausted now. We played with that toy for an hour and I'm going to go to sleep. Before you take the toy away, they're probably not going to be excited when it comes out the next time. You know, it kind of loses its excitement factor.
Yes, you got to build hype. and keep the hype.
Exactly. Oh my goodness. So, okay. Question for you from Emma Richardson. Hi, Emma. Thanks for your question.
Yes.
My dog hates his crate. What am I doing wrong? That's a broad question. It's a loaded question. I mean, crates are sometimes something that dogs will pick up associations with from our mistakes.
Yes.
So a lot of the times, puppies, when they first come home or when they're first introduced to a crate, they do what?
They cry in it.
They do. And our heartstrings just burst. Yes. Because, of course, they would. What,
right.
How could we listen to a crying puppy and not feel for them? Mm-hmm. But crate guilt is real. But
right.
Don't stress about that piece. It is completely normal. It's not your dog being emotional either. It's tactical on their part. Mm-hmm. You know, they've gotten used to, with mom and litter mates, squawking and somebody would come and pay attention.
Right.
So some dogs will come home and they'll already have this really well ingrained idea that making lots of noise, crying, screaming, barking, mm-hmm. whatever, brings them attention.
Right.
Sometimes it's a new experience for them in this new home because mm-hmm. we react without necessarily thinking about what we're rewarding in the right. dog. So the best tactic when you've got a young puppy that you're introducing to a crate is to not feed into that crying and not reward it.
Right.
So I always want to make sure that anytime I go to my dog's crate or I release them from the crate or I give them any sort of positive attention in the crate, it's when they're being quiet.
Yes.
Because then they start to click, mm-hmm. oh,
right.
it's me being quiet that helps
yes.
with getting the attention as a new tactic.
Right. Yep.
And then they'll move on to that tactic.
Yes.
You know, dogs don't, they don't get stuck in the past where
no.
they're like, oh, I miss crying in the crate. I miss that
right.
tactic.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm going to try it again to see if it'll work. If we give them alternate tactics to use, they're going to take that.
Right. Yes. So. Yeah. People often create their own separation anxiety
yeah.
by the puppy starts to cry and, oh no, I'll get you out. Don't worry. And the puppy goes, aha,
mm-hmm.
I know what to do to make yeah. you. And then, you know, later on, the person realizes the puppy does have to stay in the crate. But now the puppy's had so many wins.
Yeah.
So now the barking and whining turns into biting at the bars and really screaming.
Yeah.
And it's tough love, but you know, we always recommend ignore puppy whines in yeah. the crate. It's the kindest thing to do, and it's not going to cause separation anxiety.
Yeah.
It's you responding to the whining that
absolutely.
Will cause it.
Absolutely. And the messages that we give our dogs, the things that we reward our dogs with are the things that they are going to go, oh, I'm going to keep repeating that behavior because it's rewarding. They don't have these ethical debates in their head of what's right and wrong. They just know what is rewarding and what's not. So
right.
if we can make the things that we like be the rewarding things, we're going to align their lives with ours. And then it's just smooth sailing.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's probably going to be some bumps along the way.
There's always bumps. Yeah, puppy training is never a straight line.
Puppy,
there's many dips.
Yeah, have you seen
and
that?
And cliffs.
exactly.
right.
Have you seen that
yes.
graphic where it's like what I expected it to be and what it actually is?
Right.
And there's like landmines and yep. pitfalls. And
I think there's a big ocean chasm or
yes.
something like that too. Yes, yes.
what it's really like.
Right.
Yep, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty
yes.
much.
Yes.
But stick with it because it is such a rewarding journey. Mm-hmm. It truly is.
It's like raising our children.
Yeah.
I remember when my son was a toddler, we'd have a few good weeks and then I'd have a few weeks where I thought, you know, why did I have a child? no, yeah. no, never
Can
was
I put
that.
Him back?
Right. Yeah. it was never that bad, but it was like, oh my gosh, like we have been doing
yeah.
so well. What has happened here?
Yeah.
And same with puppies.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There's going to be regressions.
Yeah, absolutely. But totally worth it.
Yes.
Because
oh, yes.
the journey, the enjoyment, the fun training, the realizations, the relationship, all those things. It's
so
gonna make
worth
it wonderful.
So it adds wonderful. A whole element of to your life, like a whole element
absolutely.
Of love that you didn't even know was in you.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can't even imagine life without my dogs.
No.
Like that's a sad day for me. and on that note, I'm Instructor Shannon.
Instructor Swanee.
Happy training.
The McCann Dogs Podcast is brought to you by McCann Professional Dog Trainers. We help dog owners to have a well-behaved, four-legged family member. Please give us a call at 905-659-1888 or visit us at McCannDogs.com. Happy training!